This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Live on tape from Hollywood, The Larry Sanders Show. Tonight, join Larry and his guests, John Stamos, Helen Reddy and the National Spelling Bee Champion, and me, hey now, Hank Kingsley. And now, because he's already been paid, so we might as well use him, Larry Sanders.
It's Comedy Week on Fresh Air, and we open today's program with Gary Shandling. His HBO series, The Larry Sanders Show, is a parody of late-night talk shows. It's up for 16 Emmys this year. That's more nominations than any comedy series ever received. Gary Shandling is the show's star and co-writer. He parodies talk show hosts so well because he used to be the real thing, Johnny Carson's regular substitute host. Back in 1992, Gary Shandling was supposed to join us from the NPR Bureau in Los Angeles. But shortly before his expected arrival time, Gary's publicist called to say Gary had car troubles and couldn't get to the studio. So we did the interview from his home phone. Okay, so you can imagine what went through my mind when I found out that your car wouldn't start. In your talk show experiences, have you ever had that happen where someone doesn't show up and they say their car isn't working?
No, it is the flimsiest excuse, isn't it? It would be better to say my dog ate the car, I mean, or something. It sounds like one of those horrible high school excuses.
So what kind of car do you drive that's giving you this trouble?
The worst story than that, what it is exactly, is my girlfriend bought a Range Rover, and I said to her, well, you know, a Range Rover in California, you know, it's a four-wheel drive vehicle, you know, and, you know, I guess she figures, you know, in case it starts raining, she can't get to that audition in time or something, you know. So it's a four-wheel drive. For me, it's a slightly affected car, although they're very nice cars. And it's hilarious because she bought it yesterday and it's brand new, and then she was going to drop me off at the studio and the car wouldn't start. So not only have I missed this opportunity to go directly to the studio, but simultaneously she's been on the phone screaming at the car dealer saying, Gary Shandling missed an interview, which of course meant far less to them than she'd hoped.
So listen, this talk show, you've done the talk show for real, you know, guest hosting on The Tonight Show, and now you're doing a parody of it. What's the difference, do you think, between Larry Sanders as a late-night host and Gary Shandling?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I actually think that on the talk show part itself, on the Larry Sanders Show talk show part that we see live on the air, that is basically me hosting a talk show. That is how I would host a talk show. Larry is very different than Gary as a person, and what we see backstage is not exactly me. Larry is much more driven career-wise, much more competitive career-wise, much more concerned about ratings than I am, much angrier than I am. On the air, he is very similar to what I would be like hosting a show. I find myself, since it's a satire of talk shows, doing a few Johnny moves that I wouldn't probably do if it was really me, and doing a few kind of Letterman moves that I wouldn't do.
On some of the episodes, there's a lot of tension between what's happening off camera and what's happening on camera. I mean, there's one in which you're fighting with your wife, you know, kind of backstage, and then you have to keep running back on the air and being really affable. Has anything like that ever happened to you in yours in the time that you really hosted?
That particular thing has never happened. I have been in a relationship where right before I went on stage, and this is what I took the moment from. It was many years ago, and I was getting ready to go on stage at the Comedy Store, and my girlfriend at the time said, you know, I really want to discuss our relationship. And I said, well, okay, but I'm on in 2 minutes. Well, she said, there's never a good time to talk to you, is there? And we were really having an argument right before I went on stage. And then that kind of thing never stopped. I was hit by, this is not a joke, I was hit by a car about 6 months after that, and I was in the hospital with all these tubes connected to me, and she came to the hospital, and I was on the critical list, and she said, I really want to talk to you about our relationship. And I was, like, on Demerol at the time. And I said, well, you know, if I don't think this is the right time, but anyway, it sounds like I probably was very shut down and not communicative, but I was, and she just picked the wrong time. So we took that element and made a show out of it.
Boy, I hope she wasn't thinking that you would do anything to get out of talking about the relationship. You'd do stand-up, you'd get into a car accident, anything to avoid that discussion.
I never thought of it that way. But I guess when I joined the astronaut program, it was...
The first TV show you worked on was Sanford and Son.
Yes.
It must have been strange to be a white guy from Tucson writing a black sitcom.
You know, they were all white writers, and I just did a little luncheon with Keenan Ivory Wayans, who, of course, created In Living Color. And we were sitting next to each other, and he didn't know that I had written for Sanford and Son, and he couldn't stop laughing. He literally couldn't stop laughing for 5 minutes when I said, you know, I started on Sanford and Son, and just looked right at him. And he said, my God, you know, things have really changed, because it was primarily white writers that wrote that show. And, of course, now everybody is aware that we should be looking, meaning the industry, looking for new minority writers. And there are so many talented guys out there that should have been writing that.
So, did you write for Three's Company, too?
You know, I had a script assignment for Three's Company, and that's actually when I decided, that was right in the time when I was deciding, I just can't do this.
Well, talk about formulas.
It was when, in fact, really a voice deep down inside of me said, what are you doing? And it was very much like the engineering school when I just said, what are you doing? It was the same kind of feeling, and it was the same formulas over and over again, and I just said, I can't do this. And that's when I stopped and started to do stand-up.
Now, I think that the auto accident that you referred to earlier also had something to do with you deciding to change directions.
Well, there was a chain of events that happened. I was, you know, it was right around the time of, I'd finished my Welcome Back, Kotter, and I was doing a script for Three's Company, and I also had a pilot I was writing, and I was unhappy creatively, and then I got hit by a car, which we don't need the details of, but I was hit by a car and really seriously hurt. And as I was laying in the hospital, I really did realize, I had one of those realizations, like, you know, what do you really want to do in your life is what you should look at, and then try for that. And the only thing that I knew that I wanted to do was develop comedically. I've never had a goal other than when I was hosting The Tonight Show, which really was a goal of mine. But I never had a career goal. It was more an inside creative goal to learn to use my funniness and to discover what my level of ability was. And that's what I went after when I went on stage. It was really a self-discovery process.
So when you were lying there in the hospital, mm-hmm. fighting for your life, were you...
Funny? Was I funny?
Well, seriously, since you were thinking so much about comedy, were you already trying to transform this into, like, your next routine?
Yeah, I did. I wrote several routines in the hospital.
You really did?
I wrote my first time on The Tonight Show, my first stand-up piece was a piece about being in the hospital and hearing that woman in the hospital paging doctors all day long going, Dr. Juergens, Dr. Mark Juergens, over that hospital intercom.
Uh-huh.
Dr. McAvoy, Dr. John McAvoy. And I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and I heard that hospital intercom 24 hours a day for 2 weeks, and I realized this woman could say anything, and no one would know the difference. She could go, Dr. Pudding, Dr. Chocolate Pudding, and someone would show up.
When you started doing stand-up, did you have a sense of who you wanted to be on stage? You know, like what aspects of your own personality you really wanted to bring out for your stage persona?
It was really a nightmare. I had no idea who I was when I started, and I was frightened to death and had no natural performing skills. I'd never performed before in my life, and to be thrown onto the stand-up stage is an experience that you cannot fathom until you're actually there, because there's no place to go, and everyone's looking at you, and you can't even see them because of the lights. and yet you have to manage to start talking and be funny on top of it. And at the beginning, I think I did, I wrote material that was very much influenced by Woody Allen, who's my favorite, and I used to do very offbeat jokes that sounded like I was reading them, and it took years to develop a style. And actually what happened is I was involved in a relationship, and the girl left me, and I was very hurt, and I had to go up on stage, and I finally just turned to the audience and said, this girl left me. I said, what happened is she moved in with another guy. So I dumped her, because that's where I draw the line. and so that was the beginning. That was really the beginning of, you know, people of the Gary Shandling dating years in stand-up that came out, you know, because I realized, oh, I started to really spill my guts about being hurt, and people really related to it. And, and it just was one of those things. It was in a nightclub in Dallas. I really remember it very well.
Can you give me a sense of what you were doing before you started doing the more personal stuff?
It was all, there were awful jokes like, you know, I had a high school principal who, actually this is true, I had a high school principal who committed suicide by hanging himself in the rings in the gymnasium. And it was the next day that my physical education coach found him hanging there in the rings, and he gave him a 9.8.
Oh, God.
And it was stuff like that. That really was not connected to, you know. Actually, that really all happened, of course, other than the 9.8, but every part of that story is true. I said I had a real stupid, I said my coach was really stupid. He had a big sundial in his front yard, and he pulled his back out trying to wind it. It was that kind of stuff that barely worked at all.
It seems to me one of the problems of becoming a celebrity is that celebrities start to take themselves really seriously and think of themselves as being just, like, terribly important.
Yeah.
And that to maintain the kind of humor that you're doing now on your shows, like, you know, the It's Gary Shandling show and the Larry Sanders show, you have to be a little bit detached from all of that in order to kind of see the humor of people taking themselves too seriously and to stand outside a little bit, both from celebrity land and from TV and movie land, and look into it. Do you worry about that being a bit of a problem, of ever getting too far inside?
You know, I think that's really a great perception. I think you're 100% accurate, and and that's smart. And you recognize something that a lot of performers don't recognize, and they do start to take themselves too seriously. The truth is that I don't, and in fact, often need to work on giving myself a little more self-importance, you know, because I still think of myself as the guy from Tucson. And what that allows me to do is look around at my friends, and I just cannot name them here, but I know the ones that I, and their friends and acquaintances, that often turn my stomach because they think they're great, and they think that they're important, and they have this aura of self-importance that has nothing to do with being a human being, and they become affected, and I'm able to see that clearly, and that's why I wanted to do this show is to you know, expose that and show how fake it is in terms of our real, you know, real life existence. I wish I could name names, but I just have friends who do movies and big movies, and my God, they have attitudes.
Yeah, one can only conclude that.
And it irritates me. If I sound irritated about it, I it's something that really pushes one of my buttons. It's something that I really dislike.
Okay, so on the one hand, you could kind of, there's the risk of getting too big and really getting carried away by that. On the other hand, you also live in fear of, like, being washed up and doing infomercials for hair replacement or something?
Well, what's wrong with that? I'm doing one next week. What's the problem with that? Hi, this is Gary Shandling. have you seen this new product? You spray it on your forehead, it makes it look like your hair comes down to your eyebrows. I'm telling you, I never looked younger.
Well, good luck with the series. I really enjoy it. And I'll let you get back to your car trouble.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get this car started and then, probably sell it.
Thanks.
So if anybody's out there listening wants a 92 Range Rover at a really good price, let
right.
me know.
Thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Gary Shandling, recorded in 1992. His HBO series, The Larry Sanders Show, is up for 16 Emmys. The winners will be announced in September.